Welcome to Mighty Parenting, the podcast with real, raw, and relevant talk about raising teens and parenting young adults. Here are your hosts, Judy Davis and Sandy Fowler.
Welcome to Mighty Parenting, a community where we help you raise teens and parent 20-somethings so they can become happy, successful, and emotionally healthy adults. I am Judy Davis, and I'm here with my co-host, Sandy Fowler, on this wonderful February. It is the month of love, and once again, we're here to give you a guest that is fantastic. We love sharing those guests with you each and every week, and this week is not going to disappoint, I know for sure. And we just want to remind you that if you want to continue to support us, pop on over to mightyparenting.com/support and see what we have there for you and how you can support the podcast itself. So February, it is the month of love and romance, and today we are talking about a romantic relationship when we have teens and 20-somethings in our house. I know when our kids were little and they'd see us kiss, or even now the dog, when we embrace or kiss, they are like, ew, gross, the dog barks, you know, because they all want to be part of it, but not really. And then when they're teens, I can remember, like, we would embrace or they'd see us kiss or something like that, and they would yell, hey, get a room. And, you know, it all escalates and changes as their life experiences change. And on the flip side of that, if they hear us fight, I know that they get worried about the strength of our relationship, or are we getting a divorce, and what they should be doing to make sure that we are okay. And I always wondered what they should see, what they shouldn't see. And that was something that I had to wrestle with a little bit. I know, Sandy, we've talked about this before, you and I.
Oh, yes, we have. And we've had some very, very interesting discussions in our house over the last few months with my girls. And just, you know, you start out joking around or something, and then the truth starts to surface about their thoughts about things. And it brought it back to me because you mentioned the idea of, you know, what happens when you fight. And one of the things we talked about were the thoughts they had when they were young. You know, they brought it up how, like, the first few times they heard us arguing, they got all scared about it. And so it leaves me wondering, like, how do you even have a romantic relationship with kids in the house? And like you said, Judy, it changes through the years. In some ways, I think it gets harder, and I almost want to use the word weirder as they become, you know, college students and 20-somethings, and mine are moving in and out and in and out of the house. And I don't know what it is about that that's made me more cognizant, but I do know also, especially with them moving in and out, I see when they're not around how important this marriage relationship is, this romantic relationship that my husband and I have, and that we do still need to keep this strong. And we want to make sure that we are still together and happy when these children eventually do fully move out. And it's kind of sticky. So I'm really glad to have Dr. Terry Orbuck back with us today. She is a nationally known research scientist at the Institute for Social Research at the University of Michigan. She's a psychologist and a professor at Oakland University, and she has spent over 25 years studying the marriage and divorce and romance and relationship patterns of thousands of individuals nationwide. She's been heading up a study from the NIH about that, and she has written a couple of books both on marriage and on finding new relationships. So if you are divorced and you are looking, she's got great info on that. And what I love most about reading her books and working with her, though, is her talent for taking all that data, so we know this is the reality, but she takes all that data and she turns it into common sense solutions that make our lives and our relationships better. And today she's going to be chatting with us about this. So Dr. Orbuck, thank you so much for joining the Mighty Parenting community today.
Oh, it is so wonderful to be with you. Thank you for that nice introduction, Sandy, and great to be with you, Judy and Sandy.
I can't believe I was looking. It was episode 27 when you were on with us, and now we are I don't know. Judy, what's the number for this episode?
It's like 57 or
it's around 57, yeah. Right? We have to look at it and see. But so really excited to have you back and helping us out with this today. I know in the opening comments, Judy made jokes about our kids seeing us be intimate with our partner. But it's true that having kids in the house does affect our relationship and the physical intimacy that we share. So can we start out with going like, what's okay? What are healthy boundaries as far as what our kids should see or not see?
Well, I think our kids are watching us all the time. They're looking to us and how we relate not only to our spouse or partner, but to everyone that we talk to and interact with about what's okay and what's not okay. So even when we go to a coffee shop or a restaurant and we interact with a service person, they're also watching us. But when we're home, they're really looking at us and they want to know what's healthy, what's not healthy, what should people do. So it's important first, I tell people, to be aware that our kids are watching us. And that's what you said in the introduction. They are watching us. But I think what we think is healthy, what we think are values about good relationships, healthy relationships, we can teach our kids through what we do with our partner. So if we think, for example, that respect and understanding are so important in terms of disagreements or arguments or conflict, then we need to be aware that our kids are going to watch us and learn from us being that. So when we do have an argument, which I firmly advocate that parents should disagree in front of their children, but they must resolve that conflict well in order to have a positive learning experience. So when we do have an argument, conflict, a disagreement, make sure that you show that you're listening to your partner, that you validate your partner's emotions, that you don't do what we call stonewall, leave the room, ignore their feelings, that we don't name call, that we do it respectfully. Because when they become adults and have their own romantic relationships, that's what they're going to do. And if we feel that touch or recognition or talking to our partner in a very respectful way, not when we have an argument, but in general, is important for them to learn, then we also need to show that and be a good role model. Because again, when they are adults, they will do what they've observed from us.
So interesting, Terry. What if the first thought out of my head was, okay, I'm thinking of all the times where, you know, maybe we didn't have our disagreement in that way, or, you know, someone stormed out and you end up solving it later when tempers have cooled down and maybe the kids aren't there then. What do we do when we've given a bad example?
Mm-hmm. I think it, well, first, you mean when the kids are there, what can you do?
Well, I mean, we need to do, so if we've given a bad example when the kids are there.
Okay. So
how do we repair that later on? Cause we're not in the moment anymore. It might be 2 days, 2 years, 2 months, you know, however long ago we did something. Maybe we have truly had a terrible pattern in our relationship or do currently. Mm-hmm. How do we fix that with our kids? How do we teach them that that's not a good and healthy pattern? That's actually not what we want for them.
I think you can do it in two ways. First, I think it's important for all of us to learn constructive, respectful ways of dealing with arguments. And that's hard. Some of us have not been taught that as children ourselves, or we have been doing it and getting into a pattern. And when we get emotionally upset and irritated, it's very difficult to be respectful and use our constructive conflict management skills. So it's not easy. But the first thing is to learn those skills. Because even if you haven't done it in the past, you can always do it in the present and the future. And we know that our children learn many times in many ways. So even if you haven't done it in the past, you can do it now and in the future. Second, I encourage people to sit down and talk to your children. it's just as important for them to understand what isn't okay or what doesn't work well and why it doesn't work well as it is for them to observe what does work well. So if you haven't dealt with it well, you've stormed off, you've dismissed each other, you've raised your voice, then if it's a day, a week, a year, 5 years or 15 years later, sit down with your children and say, you know, I know that in the past, we may, you and your father, my partner and I, may not have dealt with conflict very well. Here's what we did, but now here's what you should do, or here's what's healthy and constructive to do.
It makes me happy that you're saying that, because I have to admit, when you first started talking, Terry, I was like, oh my gosh, now I'm in trouble. Because, you know, my kids are older, both in, you know, one is married, one's in a serious and committed relationship. And it's one of those things that I'm looking back at how we resolved things or didn't resolve things when they were little. And one of the things that I've found really helpful now that they're both in these kind of relationships is it's given me an opportunity to say, I'm really glad to hear you and your husband are going through that, and or you and your wife are doing this, because we didn't when you were little. And I'm happy to hear that you aren't taking our patterns into your relationship. And it's really brought about some very interesting conversations with both my son and my daughter, because we didn't do it right all the time. But I can now go back and say, this is what happened with us. How are things going with you? And use it as a learning experience, even though they're in their mid-20s, both, you know, in relationships. So I feel so much better to know that I haven't lost it.
Oh, absolutely, Judy. And the first thing I will say is that no one is perfect ever, even myself. And I say that only because I'm a relationship expert. I don't always disagree and have conflict with my husband perfectly or even well. And so that's the first thing to remember, that nobody's perfect. No relationship is perfect. We all make mistakes. We all can apologize, and we can teach our children in multiple ways when they're young, when they're adolescents, but even when they have their own relationships, like you're saying, we can sit down and talk to them about the mistakes we made and what are they doing now in their own relationship. So it's never too late, and kids are never too old to have these learning experiences.
So how would we, if we find that we're in these patterns of miscommunication, you know, slamming the doors and things like that, what are things, do you have any tangible things that we can do to kind of get us out of that cycle?
Mm-hmm. Well, first I should say that sometimes when we get into a pattern that isn't so wonderful or healthy, it's very difficult to get out of it, because it's almost like it's ingrained in our behaviors. We're in that rut, and we tend to go toward what we're familiar rather than what's new and unfamiliar. Even if we really want to, our brain goes for that familiarity, that pattern. So sometimes it takes either someone else, like a third person, or a counselor, a therapist, a social worker, to help us get out of that pattern. Sometimes it takes a workshop, and I offer these locally on how to have healthy conflict, how to communicate well. Sometimes religious organizations offer group workshops and seminars on relationships and how to have happy, healthy relationships. So sometimes it takes going and learning or having someone else show us how to get out of it. But if we don't do that, or we're in a rut, but we're not in the pattern so ingrained, we think that we can, with our partner or spouse, get out of it, then the first thing I encourage people to do is to remember that when you're irritated and upset, it does something to your brain waves. And when we are in that altered brainwave state, we're not able to problem solve very well. We can't rationally figure things out. And so it takes your brain at least 30 minutes to go back to normal. So I encourage couples to take a break. Go get a glass of water downstairs. Go out for a walk if it's not the winter. Go take a break and tell your partner, you know what, that's a great idea, or I know we need to talk about this. I just need to take a break, right? Do the break, come back, and you will find that your brainwaves have gone back to normal and you're much more likely to engage in constructive disagreement or constructive, respectful arguing. And we tend to forget that, so we do it right away, and that's when we fall into the patterns the most.
Okay, so that's different from the storming out in that you're being intentional and saying, hey, we're going to take a break. Even though for some of us, that storming out, that leaving in the midst of it, can almost be like you've learned. You know, like I know in our relationship, I know what point we get to. I can see it happen and go, there's no way this is going to be constructive. Like, you know, we're just going to dig a bigger and bigger hole here. And all I want to do at that moment is shut down and run away. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to recognize that. But what I need to do is say, hey, we need 30 minutes for our brains to kick back in. Mm-hmm. Let's break for 30 and come back. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Exactly. When you're intentionally doing it, you want to tell your partner what you're doing. It's really the dismissing or ignoring your partner that's unhealthy rather than the storming out or leaving. It's dismissing, ignoring, just leaving. So exactly, Sandy, if you tell your partner, I know this is important. I know we need to talk about this. I need to go get a glass of water or I need to calm down, but I will be back in X amount of time to discuss this with you.
And those are the conversations that we want our children to see and hear. That seems to be even more important than all the fighting or all the disagreements. That taking a time out to regroup is a skill that we're passing on to them is what I'm hearing.
Yes, that is a skill that you want to pass on to your children. But I also think, Judy, that there are lots of other skills that you want to pass on to your children about arguments or about having respectful disagreements, like not name calling, like validating someone's emotions. If your partner comes up to you and says, I'm really upset because you weren't nice to my mother yesterday, we want our children to hear, not, oh, you can't feel that way. Don't tell me that that was the case. It wasn't. Those are dismissal statements. Instead, we want them to hear validation statements like, I understand that might have made you really upset. Help me understand what I did that you think wasn't respectful or nice with your mother. Or you're right, I would have been upset as well. So all of those are validation statements. No name calling. You don't want to interrupt one another. So there are lots of healthy conflict skills that are important for our children to learn. They may not learn all of them in one disagreement, 1 year, 5 years. And as I said, Judy, you can sit down and talk to your children about those skills at any point in time.
So when our kids get a little bit older and they have a little bit of relationship experience under their belt, okay, not even like at 15, 16, oftentimes I see that they will make judgments on what's going on within a parental relationship and they will take sides. And then all of a sudden, almost you have, you know, two camps in one house about who's agreeing with mom or who's agreeing with dad and vice versa. Is there ways to prevent that, or is it just more of the same thing that you're talking about, that validation information?
I think the most important thing for our kids to learn is that there's no right one way. And so even if something is working well in their relationship or has worked well in their previous relationships, it doesn't mean that it's right for you as parents. And situations change, life course stages influence how we interact, what we do, what's good for us, how we settle money, how we handle money. And I think that's really important to tell our children, because our children also are going to have to get along with their partner's family. And oftentimes what I see happen is that they think there's only one right way. And they may tell you, like you said, Judy, as parents, but they may also have issues, conflict, or challenges with in-laws, partners, family members. So it's important for them to understand that people do relationships differently. And people have learned how to do relationships differently by era or by generation. And what may be right for them and how they use social media and how they use technology may not be right for another couple or another set of people or partners. And so I think it's important to teach our children always to be non-judgmental, always to be open and flexible about what works well with couples. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
And I think that's the lesson. And then they're less likely to tell you what you're doing is wrong, or what one partner or parent is doing is wrong and the other one is not. So that's what we want to give our children. And I think that parents can start that conversation by asking their children, what do you think is a good relationship? When you think about an ideal relationship child, and that child could be an adolescent or an adult or a young adult, what do you think is a healthy relationship? What happens in healthy relationships? So that you're not preaching, you're not lecturing, but you're encouraging a discussion, because that's when you're really going to find out what your kids think, what they understand, and that's when you can go back and forth about, let's say they say something, you might respond with, well, why do you think that is the case? Why is that important to a good relationship or to happiness in a relationship? And that's when you're going to gather information about what your kids know and think and understand.
So these conversations, you've mentioned a few times, you know, talk to your kids, have these conversations. Are these conversations that need to happen with both parents, or is it just as effective if it's one parent with the child or kids?
I think it's just as effective if it's one child. It can be both parents. It can be separate discussions, but it doesn't matter. I think it's the discussion itself that you want to have happen. And sometimes you can even, there are these situations that are perfect for these. You're watching a movie and you're seeing a couple argue and they leave the room and storm out. You know, after the movie, you can say to your child in the theater, in the car on the way back home, when you go out to dinner, when you have coffee, either with both parents or one, what did you think about that couple in the movie? So it doesn't even necessarily need to be this conversation that happens and you both sit down at a table in your home or wherever, their home. It can be natural, and you can use outside movies and films and television programs and books and strangers or grandparents to facilitate that discussion.
And that would actually, I think, allow the kids to open up a little bit more than if it's mom and dad. Mm-hmm. A little one step removed could make it easier for them to talk about things.
Mm-hmm. And we know children always think we're going to impart knowledge on them through lectures and telling them what they should do. And so sometimes when they see both parents sit down and say, I want to talk to you, or can we talk about this, something now, kids clam up and they think, oh no, what did I do wrong? What are they going to preach to me? So if it's natural and it's with one parent, it may be less likely to have that sort of a feeling to them.
So kind of to pivot a little bit here, I just want to know, you know, you're talking about healthy relationships and healthy romantic relationships and what we need to do and the different aspects of that. And I would love for you just to address really quickly the physical intimacy part of it. How do we, what are the boundaries? A lot of parents ask, what can I let my kids see or what should I let my kids see? And how do we know physical intimacy in a healthy relationship, what we should be modeling and showing without crossing boundaries?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good question. And part of the answer is it depends on what values you as a parent want to impart on your children. For some parents, physical intimacy at all occurs in the bedroom or occurs not in front of the children. And that's a value. That's a philosophy about relationships, about interactions of all kinds. And they feel the same way with children or friends or their own parents. However, the second part of that answer is that we know touch is extremely important to individuals' health and well-being. When people are touched, they feel less anxiety, they feel less depression. Pain that they may be experiencing decreases significantly, and it sets off different hormones that are health facilitating in our body. So at the same time that I say that it depends on the values, we know how important touch is. And so when kids grow up in families and with parents who do touch one another and see that it is acceptable and okay and wonderful, are much more likely to then exhibit touch in their own relationships. So studies show that when they observe touch, public displays of affection by their parents, they are much more likely to then also have those public displays of affection, whether it be a hug or a kiss or a touch or a hand holding. That parents who hold hands in front of their children, those children are then much more likely to do hand holding in their own relationships. And if we know touch and those kinds of touch are important, and again, we also know that the longer the touch after a few seconds up to a ceiling point, but definitely, you know, 30 plus seconds. And if you think about that, that's a long hug. I say that to people and they all go, 30 seconds. They always say 30 seconds. That doesn't sound like very much. Try it. But that's when you get the health benefits. So longer touch equals more health benefits. So I encourage parents to think about both of those as they set their own boundaries and they have their own values in their families.
It's interesting that you said that, Terry, because I had heard that as well about the, you know, touch for 30 seconds. And so I started just in my own head kind of counting when we were giving hugs out in our house. And I'm like, wow, 3 to 5 seconds, that's not very long. And mm-hmm. I have my husband is touch sensitive, depending on what else is happening around him and in his body. Sometimes he just can't, and that's cool. So what I started doing was, you know, I explained this to him and I'm like, and I need touch. That's my love language. So I would go, okay, 30 second hug. And, you know, then he can say, he has the room to say, I can't right now, or not that long, or okay, but stand behind me or whatever. We can manage it. But it was funny when I started bringing that up, and you know, we brought it into our family in a humorous way, having two people in the household who are touch sensitive.
Mm-hmm. But I think that's great. I love that.
And having this discussion, right? This is what you're telling us. We need to respect and honor each other. So this wasn't an arguing situation, but it's preempting an argument situation, because if I'm not going to get hugged for a week, I'm going to get cranky and I'm more likely to argue. But it is 30 seconds is actually a really long time. Even with my one daughter and I are both touch people and huggy people. And even that, it's like, wow, 30 seconds is actually a really long hug. It's good, but it is kind of a long time.
It is a long time. And you also brought up an interesting point, Sandy, that I think is important and vital for us to hear, is that sometimes we're not in alignment with our partner, and that's okay. So that if we want to be touched and our partner doesn't at that moment, because of whatever is going on in our partner's life at the moment, at the second, or in general, we have to be okay with that. And I know for myself, that was really difficult because I'm very touchy and I'm very talky. But my husband isn't always like that. He gets into these IT, you know, situations on the computer that there can be no break, that communication cannot occur. And so I check in. Is this an okay time to ask you a question? And when I ask the question, it's important for me to be okay with the answer. No, not now. I'll let you know when I'm done. And for me, that took a lot of learning and calm and patience.
I'm giggling because I thought exactly that, Terry, as you're saying that, because I would be the person to ask that question. And then when he gave the answer of not right now, I'd be mad.
Exactly. Me too. I was.
Dude, what do you mean you can't talk to me right now?
Mm-hmm. But Terry, you had the extra little caveat in there, though, is you said that he says, you know, not right now, but it's that coming back to it. Right. It's the not brushing it off. So it is that give and take. Yes, you're respecting his need for not being interrupted and touched right now, but he also needs to return that and respect you by coming back. So that leads to my thought is, great, I'm listening to this podcast and I can never get my husband to listen to podcasts. Even when he goes, oh yeah, those ideas are great, I still can't get him to listen. So what if it's me listening to the podcast or me wanting to do self-improvement, relationship improvement, and my partner, my spouse, isn't necessarily on board with that? Mm-hmm. Then what can I do? You know, like, oh, we're fine. You know, how can I still maintain a healthy relationship if the other person at this moment is going, hey, I think we're good and I'm not ready to do this right now.
Mm-hmm. There's a great principle in psychology called the law of reciprocity. And what it argues, Sandy, is that if you add something to a relationship, and not just for one day, but several days repeatedly, and sometimes people argue or studies argue that it takes 21 days of you adding something to your relationship for the partner to return in kind. So I firmly believe that you as an individual listening to this podcast, reading self-help books, learning good conflict management skills can add those to your relationship and change that relationship. Even if your partner isn't consciously learning and adding him or herself. So the mere fact of you doing it will change things up in your relationship, and then they will return in kind some of those behaviors as well.
So what I'm hearing, though, putting that together with the other things we've been discussing, the big pitfall I see there is us going, oh, I just wish he would do that, or if she would just, whereas what I'm hearing here is I would need to sit back and go, what can I do to make this relationship better, as opposed to looking for how can I get them to do what I want them to do?
Exactly, because in reality, we can't change other people. We can't sit around and say, you need to change, you must change, I'm going to make you change. But we do have control over ourselves and our own behaviors. And like you just said, we can add healthy behaviors to our own relationship. And the important thing that I have found that research shows, my own research, is that it's not huge, big behaviors. It's these simple little behaviors that you can add and change in your relationship that then will change the whole relationship and your partner in kind. Mm-hmm. So 21 days, you can, for example, compliment your partner. Every single day, wake up and say something wonderful about your partner's strengths, how they look, what they've been doing, You can even just say, thank you for being in my life. That's a compliment, right? Or you make my life exciting and great, or you're the best father, the best partner, any of those compliments, or directly. Like, I love how you wash my car. I enjoy how you spend time with our children. Any of those compliments every single day. Your partner will begin to feel differently about themselves, and they will begin to compliment you in kind. Mm-hmm. Second, really simple thing is to practice what I call the 10-minute rule. 10 minutes every single day, at least 10 minutes. Ask your partner some questions about things other than work or family and children, who's going to do what around the house, or your relationship. So you don't want to say, how do you feel about me, or what do you think about us, or any of those questions. But questions about those questions that you used to ask when you first were dating, like, if you won the lottery, what would you do with the money? If you weren't doing job-wise what you were doing now, what would you do?
It's fun that you're saying all that stuff, because I know when we had you on that episode 27, you shared that rule, and when we started to implement it into our relationship, it made me realize that so often the problems that popped up were because, one, I didn't ask what I needed, and two, everything became businesslike. We had an agenda and we had to finish certain things, and it was all, we lost that sense of discovery in our relationships, which trickled down into the physical intimacy and all the other stuff, because we weren't sparking the interest anymore. We were just focusing on the problems. And that little 10-minute trick is so valuable, because then we can actually focus on the solutions, not the problems, and the excitement again. The excitement is those little dreaming together is what I find to be the most, the thing that leads us to the place we want to be at in our relationship. So I appreciate that.
Exactly. And then it's those simple things, but also back to your children, you know, when you are raising children and working hard, which we all are, it can be really easy to just focus on those kinds of things. But one of the lessons or messages that we want to give our children is that it's very important not to forget a romantic relationship. And they will learn that. They will learn or watch or observe whether or not you totally forget your romantic relationship, or you still focus on your romantic relationship. I remember as a child growing up, my father would come home. My mother was a teacher, so she was always home when we got home. But my father is a psychiatrist, and he would come home later. And when he would come home, we would go to the door and get so excited about seeing my father and want to tell him a million things that went on during the day. And my father very calmly would say, I love you guys. I can't wait to hear about your day. But give your mother and I 15 minutes and we will be right back. And at the time I thought, oh, I can't understand. I don't believe he's doing that to me. And now when I became a young adult, and now as an older adult, I think, wow, that's exactly what I learned to do in my own relationship as well. Yes, my kids are important. Yes, my house is important. Yes, everything else is important, but also don't forget my romantic relationship.
And that is really interesting, because once we have kids, it is so often that the kids come first. The kids get put first before everything, including the relationship of the people who are most important in the kids' lives.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And what are you telling the kids? And you know, I think both are important. So it's not that you're placing your children as less important, but make your romantic relationship very important, because otherwise they're learning the message that relationship isn't very important at all.
Well, and one of the other things that was interesting to me, Terry, is back when I had my other podcast, however many years ago, what did we decide? That was like 5-6 years ago or something when we first did our first interview. And we were talking about your book, Five Simple Steps to Take Your Marriage from Good to Great. And what I loved about that was that idea that you don't just have to work on your marriage when it's a mess. And like you said, the, what the book showed me from all of your research was they were little things. It, these aren't huge monumental projects. These aren't things that we have to put incredible amounts of time or energy or emotion into. They're tiny little actions that we can take on a daily basis, like that one that your dad did. That is a beautiful thing and something that takes no extra energy or effort.
And it will trickle down to the kids in their relationship. It sends that subliminal message almost that my relationship with your mom is really important. And so when they become a mom or a dad, they're going to say, my relationship with my spouse is really important. And that seems to me like the biggest takeaway of the whole day is showing our kids that that relationship that you have with your spouse is important and has value and feeds you as a person. Because I think that that's the thing that gets lost sometimes. You know, we're a team when it comes to parenting, but where did that all come from? It came from the unity of two people coming together. So it's just beautiful.
Yes, it is beautiful. And it is an important message that the relationship that two people have, two parents have, is important, and to show that to your children. I also think another issue that gets lost when we have children is that relationships also can be fun. Because when we have children, we're very serious and we are supporting them and our household and we're working hard on the family and all of that. And sometimes we also lose the notion that relationships are supposed to be fun and interesting. So, you know, show your kids that as well, that, you know, when you go outside and there's snow on the ground, you know, build a snow person with them. Throw a snowball at your partner. Laugh with each other, because that's also an important message that gets lost with families that have children along the way.
That is good. And I would also just encourage anyone who's listening who is enjoying this chat to go back and listen to episode 27, because we covered different angles, but still on families and kids in relationships. But I want to go back and just kind of go, okay, so what are the high points? What we talked about today is that kids are always watching us. They are seeing how we interact with everyone, including a romantic partner or their parent. And so what we want to do is, like with everything else we say at Mighty Parenting, we need to model what we want them to be doing. And we want to model a healthy relationship. And that comes through in the disagreements, because people are going to disagree. So we want to do is show them that when we disagree with someone, yes, we may argue, but we listen, we value them and their ideas, we validate their feelings, we are respectful, we don't storm out, and we don't name call. We also need to recognize that we are human beings, and when we get upset and we get angry, our brains will shut down on us and shift us over to a non-constructive place. So we can respectfully tell our partner, hey, we need to take a 30-minute break and then come back and let's work on this then. But however we do that, if we argue, it's okay. It doesn't harm our kids and in fact is helpful for them if they see us argue, as long as we also show them how to solve it and using those tools to help them see how to be in a relationship themselves as they get older. Also, we said that Dr. Orbach told us that we want to have conversations with our kids about relationships, and it's great. We can use other people around us or characters in a movie and go, hey, what did you think about that couple in the movie? What did you think about the way they handled that situation? You know, anywhere that you are. And that way we can get our kids to open up and we can find out what they're thinking and help them, again, understand the healthier ways to do this. And as always, we are not perfect. Very likely we have made mistakes, or maybe we're in the middle of a mess and we still need to learn how to have a good relationship. One thing we can do is to ask for outside help, just to get to learn the skills that we need and to get our brains out of the pattern and that familiar, comfortable reaction that they are used to. Also, if you have a spouse or a significant other who is maybe not on board with the idea that right now they want to work at your relationship, that doesn't mean nothing can happen. It means that you can take the reins in your own hands and look at yourself and go, okay, where can I do something good for our relationship? Where can I give back to my significant other here? And as Dr. Orbach always teaches us all the time, it's the simple little things that have a big impact. So if you're thinking, I'd like things to be better, and maybe things are good, but you still go, hey, better is always better. So, you know, look at doing something for 21 days. Either complimenting them every day, using the 10-minute rule, which we did discuss in both episodes, or some other act of kindness and love, and just be doing that. And then remember that relationships are fun. Enjoy our relationships and let our kids see us enjoying our relationships. Dr. Orbach, I love your book. I love having you on the show. For anyone who's listening and they want to get more from you, where can they find you?
They can find me on my website, which is Dr. Terry, D-R-T-E-R-R-I, thelovedoctor.com. And that's all one word, Dr. Terry, thelovedoctor.com. And thank you so much for having me on the program again. I love you both.
We love having you here, and we will have the link to your website in our show notes over on mightyparenting.com. And just want to thank all of the listeners for joining us today and being part of the Mighty Parenting community. Like I said, you can go to mightyparenting.com to see all the support we have for you, because we're not just a podcast. We are a community looking to help you raise your teens in a healthy, effective, and fun way. So remember, you are a mighty parent. And we will see you next week.